If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the universal Christ. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christ. This evening, our seminar topic is Initiation, Our Christing Process, as enacted by Jesus. So if you're ready, let's take a deep breath and integrate and align your soul and its higher purpose with your human vehicle of expression. Another deep breath. And bring that energy all the way down to the top of your head and throughout your body. And present yourself tonight before the Christ. And allow that great exemplar of perfect love and perfect wisdom to visit you in a very special way. At this time, the Christ comes to each one of you, offering a gift. It's like he's asking each one of us, what can I do for you? What gift would you like to receive? In the Bible, Christ declared, all power in heaven and earth has been given me. Wow, think of that. All power in heaven and earth. And that very person is asking you, what can I do for you? So take that personally if you would like. Why not take this opportunity to ask of him what your heart most desires? You know, consider what you truly want. So you don't ask for a Twinkie. When he owns all of the grocery chains in existence, if you catch my drift. Consider that all heaven, all of earth, all of the vast creations of the Almighty are in his governance, administration, and care. So that all power in heaven and earth has been given him. So many neglect coming to the Lord and utilizing him as the first resource for assistance, comfort, and counsel. You know, instead we so often turn to others, the world, or we look to our own means and cleverness, our own strength. So why not take this opportunity right now to come to the Christ directly and just crawl up in his open arms and melt yourself into the warmth of his heart and just receive like a little child. And I'll go to him with the innocence of a child. If you like, as a suggestion, I've often done this, and it really is amazing how it works. But you could write whatever it is that you would like from him of him. You could write it down on a note and put your written request under your pillow or on your altar, wherever. But it's a good idea to sleep on it, huh? Put it under your pillow and see what happens. You know, many years ago when I was creating and teaching Christ consciousness classes for Peace Theological Seminary, I used to give this homework assignment for the first class. I'd ask each person to write a personal letter to Jesus, the Christ. They didn't have to turn in their letter, but instead to share it in class, whatever it was they experienced in the process. It turned out to be life-changing for everyone. It was interesting because many of the class participants were Jewish and really had a thing about relating to Christ. But everyone had some personal block, whatever, shame, guilt, unworthiness, religious indoctrination, whatever, that was in there somewhere that was blocking a deeper relationship and was distancing that relationship by putting Jesus on a pedestal and as an example that by comparison none of us seemed or felt like we could live up to. And I think more than anything else, if you study the Course in Miracles, which was authored by Jesus himself, you really get the feeling that the whole life of Jesus was for one purpose, and that was to reveal that we are identical to him in every way. We are all the sons of God. And collectively now, we are the emerging Christ race. And interestingly enough, one of the definitions for the soul in esoteric understanding is that the soul comes from the very heart of the great central sun, the solar Christos, and the soul is a flame from that great effulgent light and is called the solar angel. Wow. Try that on for size. I'm a solar angel. I'm a son of God. You could spell that S-O-N or S-U-N. I'm a member of the emerging Christ race. Wow. So the entire thrust of human evolution is the revelation of inner light and its outer manifestation. It's the merger of the human personality with its soul purpose. And the purpose of soul is to reveal God. That's it. That's the whole enchilada. We are embodied light. God spoke, and we came out. Yes, we are the living Word that became flesh and dwells upon the earth. So, since the very beginning of time, man has always worshipped the brightest light that they could see. The sun, the moon, stars, fire. These were some of the earliest things that mankind worshipped. Today, we recognize divine light in a person, through their radiance, through their love, through their compassion. And we're drawn to the spiritually advanced individuals by this love and wisdom and compassion. The purest examples of these embodiments of love, wisdom, that we know of historically were Jesus and Buddha. And before them, the avatars, Rama and Krishna, Satya Sai Baba, even more recently. But we live in the time when more light is embodied on this planet than ever before in human history. It's this very light that is bringing all that is dark up to the surface so that we can deal with it personally and collectively. And we are moving rapidly into a planetary frequency in which the soul and personality must merge or leave the planet and re-embody in one of lower frequency. Because we are entering the seventh golden age of living love and living light. And we, you and I, are part of that emerging race of Christed ones who are embodying that very living light and living love. And it's through our thoughts, words, and actions that the kingdom of heaven is manifesting on earth. That's our job assignment. That's what we're doing, but not idealistically. You know, we have to lay the ideals all aside and realize that every one of us is perfectly equipped to do what we do, however we do it. Because it's simply living a life as much in tune with our soul, with the soul, because we are souls. We don't have a soul. We are souls. So it's living a life as true to the soul that we are as we possibly can. Bring it forward in moment-to-moment activities and interactions. It's not something you wait to do until you're at a certain degree of understanding and development. It's every minute, every day. Will you be kind? Will you keep your mouth shut and not say things that are ugly and hurtful to others? Will you be courteous? Will you go the extra mile to help someone? Will you put aside your own agenda and just be available for Spirit to use you? It's simple, simple little daily actions. It's the attitude we carry in our heart and mind, even though we don't speak. And so the living of a Christed life is bringing the personality with its ego agendas and laying them aside so that that which is greater can soar through you. And in that process, gradually, that which is lesser falls away. It atrophies, shrinkles, and dries up. But the power of that is transformed within you, because authentic power comes from the merger of the human personality with its soul. Then you have a life of genuine influence and power. But you're not going after either of them. You don't care about personal influence and power. You just care to be empty and available for that which is greater. So in this seminar, I'd like us to look at Jesus, the Christ, from a more human as well as a more esoteric perspective. As a soul, just like you and me. So if you'd like, let's examine the main events of his life in terms of the initiatory process that they represented, that every single person on the planet is undergoing in some form. Now, 2,000 years ago, Jesus, or Yeshua, which was his name in Hebrew, was more advanced than any one of his peers. He was an advanced disciple and a very, very high initiate, as many of you are today. And his life was an enactment of the process we all must pass through to become Christed and at one with the Father. The term, the Father, represents basically the monad, or the spirit. You could call it the I am principle. You could call it the solar logos, in whom we live and move and have our being. You could call the Father Sanat Kumara, who holds that position as the Father in heaven in terms of this earth. But what we need to do is realize that is a principle that's universal, doesn't belong to any religious doctrine or tradition. It is present and indwelling everyone. Everyone is a combination of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. The Father is the monad or spirit. The Son is the Christ principle. And the Holy Spirit is that which animates your body, enables you to express that divinity through your human form. So every one of us is the Trinity embodied. But the one that does the power is the Holy Spirit, which is the divine flow of light and love as it moves through the human personality that has merged with its soul. So the life of Jesus of Nazareth 2,000 years ago was an exact enactment of the process we all pass through, every one of us, so that we may also be a spirit-led Son of God, just as he was and is today. So the term Christ is not the surname of Jesus, but the title of an office, like the president is the title of an office. The Christ is the master who is the head of that office, called the office of the Christ. The Christ is also a universal principle with a capital P. The Christ is the principle of love, wisdom. It is the energy of love, wisdom that governs our solar system and governs what we are here on the planet as embodied light to integrate and exemplify. So this same love, wisdom, compassion principle is also known by other names in other religious traditions, such as in Buddhism, Avalokiteshvara, Chinrezi, Maitreya Buddha. In Hinduism, Ishvara, Mahavishnu. In Islam, Iman Mahdi, and so forth. Each tradition has a way of calling that principle of love, wisdom, and compassion the penultimate expression of divine light. Now, the Lord of the sixth degree of initiation is called a Chohan. And such a master is one who has attained Christ consciousness and has often been termed an ascended master. Many of you are familiar with that term, but you may not have known necessarily what it meant. Jesus is a Chohan and enacted the sixth initiations through the major events in his life. So let's see what they are and how they apply to us. Number one was his birth in Bethlehem. Bethlehem means the house of bread in Hebrew. The physical body of every one of us is the house of bread, which has the same meaning in Sanskrit, where the physical is called the food sheath, or, in Sanskrit, the Anna Maya Kosha. Anna means food. Maya Kosha means illusory vehicle or sheath. So we have all been born in the house of bread. The Christ child, the infant Jesus, represents the divine potential in its infancy. Born in the house of bread, yet undeveloped and untested. It is that divine spark or soul that sleeps as a latent potential until it is awakened sequentially through interacting with light. And that interaction, integration, and absorption of different gradient degrees of light is what we call initiation. So the first initiation occurs when one awakens to that divine potential and begins to bring one's physical life into alignment with one's soul purpose to some degree. The first initiation requires the mastery of the physical body. So most sincere light workers have passed through the first degree of initiation. I'll say that right off the bat. Signs of that in a person, and it's certainly not limited to this, but the signs I've noticed in first degree initiates is an emphasis upon physical purification and self-discipline in physical matters. So often first-degree initiates demonstrate that physical mastery in some manner, like for example, in just one, would be an Olympic athlete or a ballerina. You know, there's many other examples, but just to show you how both of these people would have to devote their entire life to physical discipline and physical mastery. It would affect what they eat. It would affect their sexual routine and relationship. It would often require just grueling mastery of the physical body and its tendency to want to be immobile and not to exert itself to the point of pain and exhaustion. So it's constantly going beyond what would be the easy way in terms of the physical life. Now, the second degree of initiation, Jesus symbolized by his baptism in the River Jordan. The River Jordan is really the river of life. And so he entered the stream of the river of life, the spiritual divine light and love that flows through life to the soul. And as he was baptized, he was recognized by the Father. What does that mean? It means for the first time that he began to be registered at a monadic level. The spirit itself recognized the soul was in that process of returning home, so to speak, which is symbolized by oneness with the Father. So right after baptism, the Bible said that he was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tested. And the wilderness symbolizes the trials and tribulations of daily life, where the soul and the ego battle for supremacy over our life's choices and directions and motives. And so he was tempted and tried and tested. You might want to read the gospel about that and see how it applies to you. because I think you'll find that it very much describes what we go through. The second initiation has to do with the mastery of the astral body. The astral body is the body of imagination, emotion, feeling, sensuality, desire, and generally is purified through acting out your ambitions. The second degree initiate is busy. They are out there really trying to make something happen. And that's what gets the fire of purification going in their motives and their desires and their modus operandi. So the second degree of initiation, one is devoted and dedicated to the spiritual life and must master one's sensual desires so that you're not run by them, and one's ego tendencies, again, so the ego doesn't rule and reign, and gradually to bring the desire nature and the ego's tendencies under the control of the soul. So the astral body is the body one is learning to master in that second degree of initiation, which is symbolized by the baptism of Jesus in the River Jordan. And during that initiation, one learns to discriminate between the pairs of opposites, good and evil, pleasure and pain, all of the dualities. So the law of duality and polarity is what is prompting the choices that bring right mindfulness and right action to bear in every area of one's life. And the initiate must learn to walk the middle path between the pairs of opposites. This is the path often referred to in the yogic tradition as neti neti, not this, not this, or tat tvam asi, this also am I. So you can take either path. But the bottom line is you walk in that neutrality of soul, or at least you strive to, where you walk through the pairs of opposites and you don't get pulled one way or the other. And the proof that you've mastered that is that you pass through the next level of initiation, which is the third. And that is symbolized by the transfiguration of Jesus. But let me backtrack a little minute on the second degree of initiation, because some of the signs of this initiation, not limited by any means, but some of the signs, is that there's an emphasis on emotional healing, inner child work, inner teenage work, a lot of emphasis on meditation, mindfulness, right relationship with all life, devotion, dedication, really characterize the life of someone who's really actively undergoing the second degree and moving into the third degree of initiation. The work is to dissolve the ego and to submit one's life to the soul and its governance and purpose. The second degree of initiation is one of lots of ups and downs. It's like you climb to the mountain peak and you see that beautiful vision, and then you have to descend into the valley and walk through the valley and learn to climb that mountain. And then you reach a plateau where everything seems great, and then you're plunged down again into the valley. So you're always shown a vision, and then you have to secure that vision. You have to secure that level by your own efforts. It can't be given from without. So So often you'll find yourself at that level under the tutoring mantle of a spiritual master. Usually you'll be on a spiritual path of some kind by this time, because it's obvious that you are working to integrate that part which is greater than the human personality in the world. You will be in the world, because our path today is in the world. It's not in an ashram. It's not off in the Himalayas. We are to be in the world, but not of it. And we master ourselves and our level of initiation by participating in life, not withdrawing from it. That's the old approach. So when you're going through the second degree of initiation that deals with imagination and feeling and emotion and all of that, the major obstacle that one has to contend with is glamour. Glamour is the attachment to a certain state of consciousness or feeling, or we get attached to even our highs, to where we want to replicate that same high, and we try to manipulate spirit so we can have that good feeling all the time. That would be a glamour. And it's very, very pronounced with a second degree of initiation. So your feelings are very, very strong. It's very difficult to master the astral body, which probably is one of the most difficult of all initiations as a second. I think a lot of people are undergoing that right now. So the third degree of initiation is when you have secured yourself and proven your ability to master your emotions in the second degree. You find yourself at that very, very important point where you truly have wedded your personality with your soul. And this is symbolized by the transfiguration of Jesus, where he shone with the glory of God. He radiated light. It said in the scriptures that his raiment was pure, dazzling white, which of course would represent the aura at this point. Where he radiated the power and the purity and the light of his full merger with his human personality and his soul. So at the third degree, we have attained a truly purified and holy personality that has become one with the soul. And this individual will radiate light and purity and is no longer ego-motivated. The soul shines fully through the human personality. What a soul does when it's unimpeded by the ego is that it serves all life selflessly, purely, and with great devotion. So, those would be some of the signs. Wherever a third degree initiate would be, you would have a powerful leader, an exemplar, with a very wide auric influence. The arena in which they operate would depend upon their particular natural inclinations, their training, their chosen field of endeavor, but primarily their race structure. I haven't gone too much into the understanding of rays, but for example, if a person was on the first ray of will and power, they may be in, for example, politics. Or if they were a third degree initiate, they might be in business, some commercial enterprise, or in economy or financial governance. If they were a creative artist, they might be a movie director. They might be an actor. They might be some painter or musician. If they were along the fifth ray, they may be a scientist. Sixth ray, they may be in some form of spiritual or religious or ashramic involvement. Seventh ray, they might be an architect. They might be involved in structuring a business or anything that has to do with the organizing protocols that would bring order and precision to any given endeavor. So you see how the rays would influence how that third degree initiate would be employing his or her influence. Now, the crucifixion on the cross symbolizes the fourth initiation. This is a very, very difficult initiation. It certainly was horrifically difficult for Jesus, but it's difficult for every fourth degree initiate. And we have a few that I can actually point to that were fourth degree initiates, so we could, if we felt inclined to, we could study their lives a bit and see how it worked out for them. For one, you have Abraham Lincoln. You have Helena Rorick. You have H.P. Blavatsky. You have Jiddu Krishnamurti. These were all very, very advanced initiates, fourth degree initiates, one degree beneath full mastery. And I understand they have all undergone that degree now, as far as I know. So this is the complete relinquishment of everything to the will of the divine. Jesus sweat blood when he poured out his soul in agony in the Garden of Gethsemane as he battled with everything within him to totally relinquish his will to the Father. How would you feel if you knew the next day, in fact, within a few hours, you were going to be arrested, you were going to be brought to a mockery of a trial, you were going to be beaten to where the flesh hung in shreds off your body, you were going to be spat upon and ridiculed, stripped of all your clothes, and crucified on a cross? So what that symbolizes is the excruciating process of dying to self. Complete relinquishment, in this case, even of the soul. The soul is that little bit of individualized sense of divinity, which even that is subsumed up into the monadic spirit part of the self. And from the fourth degree of initiation, you don't have a soul. You have become pure spirit. See, everything gets abstracted and absorbed in that process of light integration and resurrection. The human personality ego dissolves into the soul. The soul dissolves into the monad. The monad, who knows what that dissolves into? We don't even have a understanding of what that could be. But we do know that the process is endless, open-ended, and eternal. We keep moving into that which is greater, and that which is greater, and that which is greater. Perhaps this is the evolution of deity itself. Who can say? Who can say? So at the fourth degree of initiation, usually there's a great loss, physically and personally, in terms of all one holds dear. One's reputation, often one's health, very often one's friends, family, possessions, even sometimes one's life. All is given up until the divine, the pure spirit, one's atmic self alone remains. In this initiation, the soul, or monad, or pure spirit, or the atma, merge. So again, the soul is absorbed into the greater light of the monad. Signs of this initiation are selfless self-sacrifice for others, supreme detachment, great impersonality, and total surrender to spirit. Now, if you study the lives of Helena Rorick and Blavatsky and Abraham Lincoln and Krishnamurti, you'll find that initiatory process was very different to each of those four individuals. You can easily read the life of Lincoln and see what he went through, all of the failures, setbacks, torment he went through. And also, you know, a man that was very significant to our whole history in America. And then you see H.P. Blavatsky, who was castigated and is still to this day being castigated, called everything from a black magician to just a foolish old medium, to a fraud, an impersonator, a liar. Every single thing you could throw against a person in terms of attacking them viciously through slander and gossip and hearsay and just plain out-and-out betrayal and lying was what Blavatsky went through. And yet she birthed the very first of the teachings of the Trans-Himalayan Brotherhood and the Shambhala Brotherhood. She birthed them in her founding of the Theosophical Society and her magnificent books that were dictated by the masters themselves, The Secret Doctrine, Volumes 1 and 2. So a great, great, great soul. I understand that after her lifetime as Blavatsky, she reincarnated shortly thereafter in Russia, where she embodied as a man and attained full mastery. So now she's one of the masters in the spiritual hierarchy. And then you have Helena Rorick, who was very, very sensitive. Her master said that her great sensitivity came because she had been of the Devic kingdom and had actually embodied eons ago as a rose and a lily. He said flower incarnations are very rare. But in her case, that was part of her past. And she had the ability to tune in at long distance to every one of the masters of the hierarchy and to actually see what they were doing in Shambhala. And was a very, very, very pure and sacred soul. But she was also married. She had two children. I was a very close personal friend for over 22 years of her son, Dr. Svetoslav Rorick, and his wife, Devaki Rani. So I knew them up close and personal. In fact, I slept in her bed under her monogram sheets and ate from her silverware, her place settings and her silverware in her home. Was able to go up into the Himalayas and Kalimpong to Crookedy House, where she lived for the last 9 years of her life. I sat in the chair in the office where she took the dictation from the masters and the wonderful Agni Yoga books, looked out the window at Kanchenjunga, the beautiful Himalayan peak she used to look at, walked in the area which had been her rose garden. Ah, it was the thrill of my lifetime to be in that precious place where she had lived and where her precious feet had walked on the wooden floors. So just saying, you know, it looks different in each person. Krishnamurti was a great, great philosophical thinker, a great insight by observing life and people, and had an incredible mind that was completely filled with the light of his powerful soul. Great, great insight. I got to meet him. I used to go and listen to him speak at the Oak Grove in Ojai. Each year he would come and I would go and listen to his talks. But he suffered a lot physically when he was integrating the energies of his soul. He would cry out with great pain, and it was a difficult process for him. But a different life, you know, each one had. Now, the initiation of the fifth degree is full mastery. That's where one becomes an adept or a master. And this initiation was symbolized by Jesus' resurrection from the grave. So, he actually overcame the great illusion, which is the belief that most hold, that we die. He overcame that great illusion by resurrecting his dead body to living light. So, at this degree, one is considered perfected in terms of human evolution. And generally, a master of the fifth degree will work behind the scenes, and they will never reveal their mastership. It's kind of like an understood thing that you don't refer to yourself when you have attained a great level of initiation or mastery. You can always say you're a disciple. You can even say you're an initiate of a certain degree. But you never go around saying you're a master. It just doesn't happen. Helena Rurik's son, Svetoslav Rurik, was a master. In fact, when I was instrumental in him meeting John Roger when we went on our first trip to India, when we were driving away from being with Dr. Rurik, Dr. Svetoslav Rurik, J.R. turned to me and said, "You know he's one of the ascended masters, don't you?" And I burst into tears, because actually at that point I didn't know that. But again, a wonderful man. I certainly wouldn't have any problem believing he was a master, because he was masterful in everything he did. But he had that nobility and that reticence of speech that I found is very characteristic of a truly evolved soul. And anyway, I was very, very honored to have him mentor me in my early, early years. The sixth degree of initiation was symbolized by Jesus' ascension. After his resurrection, he appeared in a light body, which actually was his physical body, according to Sai Baba. But it was raised to the highest frequency you can raise a body. And he appeared to 500 people at that time. And many people didn't recognize him because they thought he was dead. And I guess the resurrected body looked a little different because, like for example, when he was walking on the road to Emmaus, the people that were walking with him had no idea it was Jesus until he was getting ready to leave. And then they realized it was Jesus himself. So this is full lordship, the sixth degree. This is the degree held by those that you call the ascended masters that many are familiar with within the light worker communities. For example, the Mahatmas, M, usually they go by their first initial. They don't really like to be called their full name because it pulls on their energy unnecessarily. But we have M, KH, H, and R. These are all Chohans. They're all those of the Ascended Masters. We could put others in there too, but I think these are the major ones that most of you are familiar with. DK, I believe, is a fifth degree master. I'm not sure. But at any rate, he was an abbot. I talked to John Roger about him, and he said he was an abbot in Tibet, one of the Tibetan monasteries. And then at a certain point, I guess he left his body and overlighted someone who was the next abbot. But the point is, they sometimes immortalize their bodies and sometimes they don't. It's up to the individual whether they want to allow the body to die and they want a new body. Or sometimes they create what's called a Maya Virupa, which is a thought form created and densified physical body that they can operate through if they wish. It's physical, you know, but it's created by in meditation. So all the masters hold various administrative positions within the spiritual hierarchy. The ascended masters I've just mentioned all work with humanity. They work behind the scenes. They work through their working disciples and initiates. And many of them live outwardly in the outer physical world now at this time. And some work behind the scenes. So it's a big and wonderful divine plan that we're all part of. We are all members of the spiritual hierarchy from the very beginning aspirant to the first degree of initiation, who's in training for that, to all the way up to the Christ himself. And the seventh degree of initiation is the Christ. That would be the master that's holding that position at the very, very head of the planetary hierarchy. This one is also called the world teacher, or the teacher alike of angels and of men. And the work is upon cosmic levels and doesn't concern us here. You know, there's no point to talking about that at this point. But most who listen to these seminars are within the first to the fourth initiatory range, I would say, with a few possibly in their fifth initiatory process. Anyone that's not an initiate will not understand really what I'm talking about. And that's how it protects itself, is that those that are not at a certain level simply can't understand the information. They don't have the dots connected to where they can understand. Now, I have met a few of these fifth degree initiates and found that, interestingly enough, most of them were unaware of their state. And I think that's because many of the masters don't work in any kind of a spiritual or religious context such as we would understand it. Because today the tests lie in the world of business, education, politics, science, finance, and the wielding of power and influence in soul and spirit-directed ways. Whereas religion was the main arena of spiritual expression in the Piscean Age, in the Aquarian Age it's more about science and group consciousness and organization and global service. And I would say primarily through the communicative technologies. And so that brings us to VBS Radio, which is very much a vehicle of Aquarian Age communicative technologies. And that's why I'm very happy that they are airing these shows and that I have an opportunity as a disciple to use this platform for my ministry and expression of my soul's light and wisdom and love. And so I bless every one of you this evening. It is in North America, Christmas Eve. the celebration of the entrance of light into this world. And now I just want you to consider the celebration in light of what we've shared this evening. And recognize that it's also your birthday. It's also your process of being the light of the world and awakening more fully to that. And so we bless every one of you. We pray that the new year ahead will be filled with a greater and greater degree of awakening to your own purity, divinity, light, and love. And that you may go forth and use your life in such a way that those who see you will see the Father and bring Him glory and adoration. Not the personality, but the Father within you that is doing the work. So let's go out chanting on IU. Anayu, Anayu, and offer your vehicle now that the Holy Spirit might fill it. And send the blessings from your monad, your soul, through your personality, and out into every single quark of this planet, all of its people and nations, the solar system, and as far as you can radiate your divine light. Blessings to all that lives. In His most holy name, Baruch Hashem Adonai, and Holy Christ Mass to all of you.